Blog Talk Radio.
Decided to make their idea real. They took their idea and nourished it and watched it grow and then watched it spread. Some of their ideas were businesses, some were creative, some were technical, some were service related, and some were social. What they have in common is that they know what it takes to get an idea off the ground. Our guest in this edition is expert carpenter Brian Holcomb. He's from Central New Jersey. He will share with us how he started off his adventure in the wood shop and grew to create fantastic artistic home cabinetry and furniture. We will learn how far he will take his art, and we will see what we can learn about the art as well, because he teaches it. Brian Holcomb is with us today. How are you doing, Brian? Long time no see.
Hi, Ron. It's good to hear from you. It's been a long time. Thanks for having me on your show.
It has been. I'm very pleased to do it. If you, listeners, you should probably know that once upon a time, a long time ago, Brian was a student in a rhetoric class that I taught at the College of New Jersey. And he has been an entrepreneur basically ever since. You were designing components for race cars, as I recall. Is that right, Brian?
That's right, yeah. I had a 67 Camaro race car and designed a chassis for it. And I built one prototype, and I sold it to a customer, a client of mine. And I'm not sure that he ever used it. I think he actually kind of keeps it more like an art piece. But it was an interesting project to do, and I kept another version of the prototype for myself.
Well, I have to tell you, I've seen the pictures of the Camaro, and if he wants to argue that it's an art piece, he's not going to get any argument back from me. I thought it was a beautiful piece of work, and I'm taking your word for the extent of its functionality as well. I mean, when you got something that is that cool and works that well, that is a work of art.
Oh, thank you. So
now,
it's been a bit of a long and winding road to get from there to interior design and interior furniture and cabinetry and that sort of thing. So to say where it started, it's almost a mystery to me as well. I had a project in mind some years ago. I decided to build a piece of furniture for myself, and from there it really grew. I did take 2 years worth of architecture at Mercer County Community College, but beyond that, most of it has just been learning as I go. So I've just researched individual designs, individual designers, and the history of those designs, and go from there.
So what you're talking about is a classic balance between book smarts and street smarts.
Pretty much. So to understand design, in my opinion, you have to understand the history of design, because it gives you a lot of insight into practical aspects of things that people worked into designs for a number of years. Especially when it comes to woodwork, because woodwork is not really new. It's been around for as long as civilization has been in existence. People have been making things from wood. And the structures and designs do not change so drastically that, we can call ourselves completely original. in any context. So it's good to understand where you came from before you know where to go.
Okay.
So when
that's
I
good. Not,
I,
go ahead.
What's that? When I put together a new design, I'm looking at historical designs and also looking around to see what else is being made currently.
Where do you find this information?
It's something you have to dig up. And so, for instance, in my view of things, I kind of lean towards, an Asian aesthetic, a lot of it being Japanese. And so in Western culture, there's not a lot of really, really high quality information available to you. So you do dig up a few resources that are out there and really dig into them.
Japanese. Yep. Have you, you've been to many places. Have you been to Japan also?
I have not.
Okay. Okay.
It's been more, the reason why I'm into Japanese furniture, there's a famous Japanese furniture maker near me in New Jersey. And
wow.
Basically, when I was, this goes back to when I was a teenager, I was loosely into woodworking, and I kind of stumbled upon a woodworking shop that sold slabs of furniture, slabs of wood. Those slabs are a piece of wood that's been cut through and through from a tree. So it's basically from one side of the tree to the other. And it'll be about, you know, say 2 inches thick or so. So they feature these as tabletops and so forth. So this fellow was working at that studio, and he had a bunch of his designs just in the showroom, and I kind of stumbled upon them and saw these are really incredible designs. The fellow is Ru Amagasu. He's the grandson of even more famous furniture maker George Nakashima. And so between the quality of design and the expression of a solid wood piece and showing the grain, and the fact that he was a very kind person, it kind of all became very influential to me. And so when I drew upon that sort of experience for my first designs, I found it leaning me automatically in that direction.
Okay, now I'm going to assume the first design that you're speaking of is the kitchen series that's on your Brian Holcomb Woodworker website. Is that correct?
Oh, no. My first designs are probably 15 years ago.
Oh, you've been at this for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Not too long after I sold my race car and all that.
You jumped from one skilled operation to another one, but an almost completely different one.
Pretty much, on the surface of it, it looks very different, but in the mechanics of it, it's not really as different as it might seem. I find that I don't know if you recall this, and your listeners, of course, I'll let them know that I had worked in an automotive machine shop at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just myself and the owner. And so I got a lot of firsthand high quality experience in situations that a person with a handful of years of experience would definitely not find themselves typically. And so I took away a lot from this experience. And so when I moved from cars to furniture making, I found that I could rely heavily upon that experience to sort of make my own way. And I think that's important in entrepreneurship. Sure. So a lot of the way that you make things, either in furniture or metalwork or anything else, are interlocking connections. And you have to understand how to machine things. You know, it's a very important part of this. And how to assemble things in a way that they'll become strong. And so those sort of things are foundational issues in building race cars and working in a machine shop and building furniture.
All right. So if I understand you correctly, part of it is about making sure that you have the right tools, and part of it is about making sure that you can make parts in such a way that they will connect solidly, that they will hold together.
So basically, all design, in my opinion, is coming up with an aesthetic and working towards that aesthetic in a way that it can be a functional piece of reality.
Oh.
So in the terms of cars, for instance, you know, a car frame can be a piece of art, but if it doesn't actually function, it's worthless. And the same for a table. If it doesn't actually hold anything up or it doesn't hold itself up, then it becomes immediately, you know, pretty much worthless. So it has to be, in both cases, functionally available, so it has to be strong.
It has to do its job, and it has to do its job well.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, Brian, I look at the photographs on the woodworker website that you have. There's quite an arsenal of tools that you have at your disposal. Did you collect all those tools on your own as well?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, it's a long process. So, you know, when I started, I had a milling machine available to me. That's kind of a leftover from the previous interest. And so I worked from there. So a milling machine is kind of a weird tool to use for woodworking, but it does function very well in a very general purpose way. But I found that I needed more tools suited to my specific tasks, so woodworking. And without having a lot of available space, I decided to sort of work towards hand tools and develop an traditional approach to woodworking. And from there, I've added pieces of machinery and so forth as they became affordable to me.
Okay. You did what you could as you could. Now, one of the things I'd like to have our audience get a handle on is what would be the first few things they would have to do if they wanted to get off the ground and start a woodworking shop of their very own. Where would they begin?
Specifically in terms of woodworking?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to I'll put it this way. I've never really started with a lot of money at hand. And so what I've done always is sort of operate as a salesperson before I operate as a, anything beyond that. So what I mean is you have to have a basic understanding of how things go together. But I've always kind of found myself in a situation where I have a person who wants something. And if I can supply that, then I'll be able to afford to supply that over time. I have a friend of mine who is an artist, and he orders art frames from me. And while I had quite a bit of experience of woodworking at the time, I had zero experience in making art frames. And at the surface, you might say that they're fairly simple, but when you dig down, they're not. And so, I think the first art frame I sold for probably $350, and it probably took me 20 hours to make it. So not making a whole lot of money there, but when you refine the process, you find that actually these are very good pieces to make, and the suffering through earning very little so that you can get to the end result is worthwhile, because you learn you learn the quality and then value of improving your process.
Well, let me make sure I understand you here. First of all, you got yourself a patron.
Yep.
And that's a little bit different from most startups. Most startups would look either for, as you know, an investor or perhaps a partnership with an adjacent type of business. But yours is more of an art shop in its own way. So the language of working with a patron is entirely appropriate. Now, I'm going to assume that as you were making these, you call them art frames that you were doing for your friend?
Yep.
And I'm going to assume that as you went through that that project, you collected some tools that you were able to carry on into further work later. Is that right?
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of woodworking tools are very general purpose. And so, you know, as I built more and more of these and has reasonably reliable, you know, patronage, I was able to afford myself a new tool that would make the process a little easier. Now, where I started with this was mostly with hand tools. And so I found that hand tools, especially in my smaller shop, were very, you know, something easily adaptable. So if I'm using it for something is like an art frame, I can also use it for a large project that was, you know, material intensive and so forth. And it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't limit me. And so I think that when you're starting, it's important to understand the basics and understand how to get the most effort done for the amount of money that you spend on a given product or tool. So what I'm saying is that, you know, for instance, in my case, I was building art frames, so you could potentially say that I should buy everything art frame related, but instead I found that very general purpose tools were more usable, because as your career continues, of course, you may not find yourself making 100 art frames anymore, but instead you'll find yourself making tables or chairs, in my case, something like that. So when you start and you don't have a product where you know it's going to continue for your lifetime or however many years, you know, you want to gear towards purchases that are very general.
Why don't you give me a couple of examples of multi-purpose tooling? I mean, I thought that was an intriguing note that you mentioned, that you wanted to have tools that you could use again and again.
Sure. So when I first started, in woodworking, we'll put it this way. In woodworking, you have to start by making the material flat. It's the simplest of process, but it's it can be a bit daunting.
Okay.
And so to make the material flat, you have to start with a very solid surface. The first and most important project was a workbench. And so you can dig into that and find that there's an incredible amount of information out there on workbenches. And so I kind of determined I wanted to work from a traditional design, modified it a little bit for the use of art frames. I made it a little bit wider and deeper than I would otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, devoted my understanding and purpose to that until it was through to completion, which a workbench, especially traditional workbench, is not a small project. So, but once I had that sort of under my belt, then I had gained even further experience and further understanding of what I needed. So it's sort of a chicken or the egg when you first start with these things, because you don't know what you need and you don't know how to make what you need.
Right.
So, in other words, you
had to take a couple of pretty good guesses in the early going.
Exactly, yeah. And it's good to, you know, as an entrepreneur, I feel that failure is kind of something to embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Because you fail regularly. It's a very
common
thing.
Yeah, I would say that's
so,
absolutely true.
And so, especially in woodworking, but you fail in a way in woodworking where you can learn from your failure very immediately. So, you know, a failure in terms of making wood flat is that it's not flat. And so, you know, just keep on working towards this process and furthering your understanding until you really have a good grasp of what you're doing in the limited amount of tools and so forth that you have available to you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, your question?
Yeah, you were talking about failures. I'm going to go ahead and assume that you ran into a couple in the early going. And it sounds to me like, based on your level of preparation, that nothing you ran into that didn't work out was devastating. You just found out what went wrong and corrected it. Would I be right in saying that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So my products have been very good to me. I haven't had any kind of devastating failures in that way, and that's important. But in terms of understanding, in terms of the process, there's many failures. In fact, you could say that you pretty much fail until you succeed. So in terms of woodworking, it's more like, you prospect a job and the job's in front of you and you realize that immediately this is going to take considerably longer than I figured because I have to learn the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you continuously, that in itself is a kind of a failure because, a profitable job is something where you make a living wage on it. So you can put that sort of thing aside. And that's the first and most immediate failure.
Did you ever find a patron to be disappointed when you ran into a failure like that?
No, I don't really make those public, so I always kind of suffer through it on my own. And I like to present only the successful result to the patron. I think it's important to instill confidence in the people who put faith in you. And so I personally will suffer through almost anything until I get the result that I want. There's been so many jobs where I spend more on tools and so forth to get the job completed, knowing that I will use them in the future, than I actually make on the project.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're starting, it's an acceptable way to run a business, I think, so long as you can survive otherwise, because you're setting yourself up for future success.
Okay, so you contend that the early failures make you better prepared for success down the road.
Absolutely. Yep. So
and you make this contention primarily because of what you learn from the failure and how you correct it. But I'm sorry I interrupted. Do go on.
Sure. I've had a specific failure that comes to mind that actually is a good one. It's a very basic understanding of wood, and to not break the rules of how wood works. So when you're working with metal and so forth, you can do things that are completely it'll send you down the wrong path for woodworking. So one of those things is to you have to allow wood to expand and contract across its grain. So it will always expand and contract in terms of width and thickness, and hardly ever in terms of length. There's really very few scenarios where you have to consider the expansion in terms of length, because for wood it almost doesn't exist, especially in the lengths that we use it. So I made a panel for a cabinet, and I made it solid wood, and it had been wrapped around itself in solid wood, so it was locked in. And so when you put it in a room and the wood shrinks, it cracks in the center. And so my clients had received this, and it looked beautiful when they first got it. And, after some months, when the wood shrank over the winter, it cracked. So they called me up and said, you know, it's got a big crack in the top of it. Is this something that we should kind of admire as a, you know, as a piece of art, or should we think that this needs to be, you know, re-engineered? And so they gave me the opportunity to, you know, recover from that and to make it, you know, better and more appropriate. And so that's what I did. You know, I took that and re-engineered the top to work around the aesthetic that I wanted, which was a solid wood wrap around what appeared to be solid wood on top. And I found that when you do this, you use another method. You use a veneer over plywood. And something that is an important thing to understand for woodworking is that you always have to work around the material. You know, the material is kind of a god in the sense that it, you know, it doesn't do what you want it to do. It only does what it does. And so once you begin to understand that, you have a better grasp of how to move forward.
You know, the way you describe it, it seems so zen.
Thanks. It's I guess it's just something that you become very familiar with. It's weird in that I didn't really expect my understanding of wood to go in this direction. It's sort of something that just came about. And that I feel it's just so incredibly important to understand the material. And when I first got into this, I think I took the material for granted. Over time, you really, really do just have a, you know, very high understanding of the material and realize that in your understanding, you don't know a lot, even though you think you do. So I feel that I learn something new on every single project that I make every time I'm in the workshop. You know, you have a greater and more respectful understanding of the material.
And then having done so, of course, will make you more effective on future projects as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
So tell me, Brian, what's go ahead.
Yeah, you were going to say? What was your question?
I was just going to ask what your next big project is going to be.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm currently working on a Honduras mahogany bed, and the bed is geared towards outdoor. So it will be in a covered patio, and yet it will be exposed to the elements.
Oh my gosh! No, see, you're making me wish I could sleep in it. That's going to be a lot of fun.
It'll be pretty cool, I think. Yeah, it will be nice.
No, you said this is a Honduran design.
No, it's not a Honduran design. The design is my own, adapted from what the client was looking for, and the material is Honduran. You know, it's a type of mahogany that comes from Honduras. And so,
and what would you?
This gets back to
what
we were saying previously.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, in terms of respect for the material, right? So, when you use something for outdoor, of course, your material choices are completely different than if they were, you know, if it were a piece that were used on the inside of the house. You have to contend with so many other issues, such as, you know, rot and that sort of thing. It's very, very basic, you know, very fundamental, we'll call it, understanding of wood, you know, simply that nature tries to bring everything back to dirt over time. Wood included.
So I guess in conclusion, understand the wood, understand the tools, understand yourself.
Yep. And I think it's important to understand your personal goals in making a business. You know, to look at a business and say that, you know, it's only a reason to make money or whatever, it's too basic. I think you have to have a passion for it to sustain yourself through times of drought.
Well, Brian, I'm going to go ahead and interrupt you here. Don't wish to, but we've only got about 20 seconds left in the show. I want to, our listeners to know that we're going to have the show link posted so you can listen to it later, and there will be a blog post associated with it later on today as well. Brian, I will send you all that information, and let's get together again another time.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me. We'll talk soon.
Yes, you betcha, Brian. Thanks very much.